Hi, I'm Linda, aka Hen in a Hat, and you're listening to Warm Blanket.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Warm Blanket podcast, where we embark on a journey to see what makes us feel good about Star Trek, where is our love comes from, and what it means for us. In short, what is our warm blanket? My name is Gary, I'm your host today, and I'm very honored to welcome here my special guest today, Linda, better known as, for many, from Twitter, mainly as Hen in a Hat. She is an amazing cosplayer, an incredible crafter, and also the third musketeer in the Nerd Escape podcast alongside Damien and Chris. She is an extremely funny, engaging, and also a prominent member of the Star Trek fan community. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a very warm welcome to the one and only Linda, aka Hen in a Hat. How are you today?
Oh, that was very nice. Thank you so much. I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay, yeah, just after a long day,
yeah.
As we've discussed before. So, first things first, and this is something that I wanted to ask ever since I've seen you posting about it. How hard was the Lower Decks uniform to put together?
Do you know what? If it's too hard, I do not put myself through the stress. It is not worth it. If you're not having fun, it's not worth it. So I try and make it as simple as possible. The Lower Decks, because I was only doing the top, because obviously the bottom is black trousers, black boots, that's mm-hmm. all you need. The top was literally just, it was a solid top that I stuck other bits of tops onto. As you can mm-hmm. probably, you can see in my tutorial video if you want to check out YouTube. So the answer is not that hard. You have to think in simple terms. And I just, because it's a cartoon cosplay as well, there wasn't that much detail. It was a nice solid color with a nice stripe and a nice lines that I could just copy, you know, without having to do too much research. I just worked off one image. Mm-hmm. So the answer is not as hard as you think. It's the full answer.
Interesting. So is it time consuming though to make a costume? Like I did Lower Decks, or you made quite a few of them in the past.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Because I have small children, I don't have, you know, they have to go to bed before I can even think about any kind of personal projects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's finding the time to do it and finding the space on the kitchen table. the time is the main thing. The difficulty is not so much, but it is finding the time to do it. But if you have an easy enough thing you want to work on, you already have it planned in your head what you're going to do. Because if I sat there and looked at the picture not knowing how I was going to do it, I don't know if I would bother. I would move on to something that where I usually can look at it and go, yeah, I can get two tops, I can mm-hmm. stick them together, you know, or I can cut this off, this thing, and stick it on, you know. I can usually mm-hmm. see it before I start working, really. So
I see. But it's just kind of whenever I seen any of your creation and I checked out a few of tutorials. I think the one of the longest one that you made on your YouTube channel, which mm. I'm going to put somewhere in the description box below on YouTube. So the Discovery Gold DOS/ Discovery uniform.
Yeah.
That was quite a hefty one, right?
Yeah.
To make.
Let me think. So that one had there was a lot of stitching to kind of imitate the stitching on the shoulders. That was a lot of work. Lining up the collar, because the collar is kind of off center and it's like a mm-hmm. half collar, you know, it's a little bit tricky. But again, now you know what, my longest costume that it took me the longest to make was definitely the Mirror Universe costume. Mm-hmm. Because that was my first time making armor, and there was a lot of figuring out what I was going to do with the foam. I knew I was going to use foam after watching a couple of YouTube cosplayers, and they're just mm-hmm. they're just brilliant with foam, and they've obviously practiced, and they've trial and errored, you know, for us, so they will they'll probably tell you the right way to go. But it was my first time, so I was pretty proud of that, to be honest. There, a lot of it was figuring out how I was going to do the gold, because the only gold thing I had was stretchy gold material, and stretchy material is an absolute nightmare. Anything once you cut stretchy material, it does its own thing. So I was, there was a lot of glue involved. And I actually, the little badges I made were probably the most fun part of the whole thing, because I just had great fun cutting them and painting them. It was much fun. But I wasn't really working to a deadline, but I was working towards a con. Most of my costumes never see a convention. That's the bad thing, though, is you know, not really getting them out there. But that one, I was heading to DST in Birmingham, so I knew I had to do a proper job. But yeah, it was totally worth it. That was my favorite costume.
And you have quite a few. I know I've seen it in your Ko-fi page, and obviously over the years you've been posting quite a few cosplayers, cosplay uniforms, not just Star Trek, but from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and I think X-Men as well.
Yeah.
So you have quite a collection. So you never really use them in conventions, though.
A lot of them, I would, like, one or two are from Halloween. One or two are from conventions, but lately it's really in the last year or two that I've just been making them, kind of as a portfolio, you know, or also kind of as a stockpile if I ever manage to get over to London or wherever the next convention is going to be. I will,
Las Vegas.
hopefully someday. At least I'll have a good supply for costume changes. It is stressful to go around a convention knowing that you're going to change costume in the middle of the day, so I don't know if I would do that, but at least I would have a choice. The conventions are stressful enough to get around, see people and visit people and go to talks and everything, so the costume is kind of an added stress. But if you put it on the morning and take it off when you go to bed, then it's not much to really think about. But unless you have all that foam that I had on my Detmer costume, because throughout the day I was kind of shedding bits of armor throughout the NEC and all through the grounds. But I really did get a good wear out of it. It's not like my current costumes that I've only worn and taken a picture of. But at least, you know, I did get a proper weekend out of it.
Oh, bless. You know, sometimes it does remind me of the time when my mom used to make my Star Trek costume, bless her. When I got into Star Trek, after like a few years, because she's a tailor, and and she made a plain simple tailor. So she made a couple of uniform for me from fleece. You can imagine it was quite hot in certain temperatures, but it was fun, and I really really loved the whole idea of, you know, making your own uniform, and bless her, she did a fantastic job, and I was always keep nagging her to do more and more. But uniforms are fun, I think, but I really love your work. It's fantastic, and I think Lower Decks uniform is your uniform is much better than I've seen anywhere else. Really.
Oh, so
no, it's awesome. And on that note, going back a little bit, how did you get into Star Trek?
Well, I blame my older sister. She,
you have to blame her.
Oh yes, she's to blame.
Bless
for
her.
all this craziness. she's 10 years older than me. So growing up, you know, she was the cool sister, wanted to be like her, obviously, you know, wanted to hang out with her, but I was too young to go out with her or you know, do what she was doing. But when she was at home, she had the next generation on, and myself and my younger brother would just kind of huddle into the armchair with her and watch it. So that's where it started. It was kind of the three of us. It was our thing. It was really, really a big, big thing. And mm-hmm. I just stuck with it and stuck with every series. You know, she mightn't have been able to catch up with the later series, mm-hmm. but I stuck with it. And that's how it all started, really. Yeah. So it was when TNG was on, I think it must have been on Sky One at the time. It was the early 90s. So mm-hmm. I just have these memories of being squished up in an armchair, and I think what it was, my most enduring memory now is probably All Good Things, and just, you know, my mum coming into the room and telling us to go to bed or something, and we're like, no, mom, no, you don't understand. No, we have to stay up. We have to watch this, and being quite sad. Yeah, that's always stuck with me.
Oh, and ever since you never looked back.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So basically you started with TNG back in the days. So and after watching all these shows and series, I know it's kind of a typical question to ask from anyone in a convention or in a normal conversation. Which one is your favorite Star Trek show then?
It would probably always be TNG, just because that was my Trek. And we were, like, at the age we were at, we were completely obsessed with it. Myself and my brother, anyway. He was 2 years younger, so we would just recite scenes from it and do our impressions of everyone. And, you know, every day had a Star Trek quote in it, you know. I do love DS9. I did not love DS9. When it mm-hmm. was on TV, we would kind of go, ugh, another one about negotiations or profits, or, you know, ugh, mm-hmm. the Bajorans, you know. we were more in the mood for, you know, something more exciting, and, you know, at that age. But I have grown to really appreciate it as an adult. Mm-hmm. It is a completely different experience to watch Star Trek as an adult. I think when you're a kid, you're just a lot of the stuff kind of bypasses you. Even as a teenager, you mightn't fully, you know, understand or fully appreciate what's going on. And Voyager, I absolutely loved Voyager as well. Janeway is my favourite captain. I don't know if I would say she's the best captain, but she's definitely my favourite. and then of course Enterprise. Oh my goodness, when Enterprise was announced, oh, absolutely lost it. Star Trek is back. I can't believe Star Trek. Yeah, I was so happy. I don't think my brother was too into it anymore. I know he was interested now. He was mm-hmm. definitely interested, but I turned into the fanatic in the family. mm-hmm. I'll always go back to TNG.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned that your brother and sister was more into it at the beginning. With me, I remember I was the black sheep at home. I literally the black sheep, because none of my other brothers watched Star Trek ever. They always I was like, oh, you're watching this stupid show again? Why are you doing this for yourself? It's like, what, don't you want to watch something else? And I was like, but I don't like it. It's like, why don't you watch it an episode? And then every time when I watched an episode or something, and let that be a TNG or DS9 or Voyager, they always be like, oh, it's like, you don't do anything. They don't do anything in the show. Just ships fly that way, ships fly this way, and they fire to each other. Like, that's not the show about, but that's what they remember. Yeah. But funny enough, nowadays when my brother sees Star Trek on the TV, sometimes he sends me a picture or a small footage, like, hey, look what's in the TV. And I thought about you. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So yeah, for us it was totally the opposite. Like, I got into Star Trek, and I remember my mom wasn't really into Star Trek either. She was like, you should do something else or with your life, not watching Star Trek. And then we got to the point when she actually started watching Enterprise, and she fell in love with it. And she loves Enterprise and Archer. She never liked Janeway though. or even Kirk and Picard. It's a very interesting balance what we have at home.
All right, yeah. My parents were they would never really have mentioned Star Trek. All my mom really would know about TNG was just coming in to call us for something, and we'd be watching it. But in the mid 90s, there was a sci-fi convention in Dublin. And I cannot remember where it was. It was in some building in Dublin, a very, very small convention. And my mom secretly, I think because she was getting us tickets, she was getting us tickets for Christmas or for my birthday or something, so she wasn't telling us anything about this, but she secretly somehow designed the brochure for the convention.
Oh, really?
Because my mom is an artist, an illustrator mainly, but she... Yeah, so she somehow got in touch with them and said, hey, I'll design your brochure for you. So that was weird that she was like, oh, hey, happy birthday. Here's your convention tickets. By the way, I designed the brochure.
Oh, wow.
It was like a double
birthday present.
It was very strange. But to design it, she... Now, there was no Google in those days. I don't know how she got these images, but it was some... alien from the original series that was on the cover of the brochure, just a black and white fold out thing. And I never really watched TOS, to be honest. Since then I've watched it on Blu-ray, but I have not seen all of it. But in those days I wouldn't have a clue. She would hear the word Star Trek and she'd look up some alien, go there you go, Star Trek, but you know, she wouldn't really understand which series it was from or anything. But I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Have you had any feedbacks from your parents? I mean, I remember when I started like collecting stuff, like, you know, having, you know, a Starship model in my home or a poster, or I even went to the cinema when they had 2009 Star Trek, and you know, they had some silly cardboards cut out of the free character, and I was like trading something else for the cinema for getting them into, and my mom always told me, it's like, oh lucky you collecting all these things. And I had to tell them like, oh, this ship is different. But she always like, oh, do you have this ship? Have a ship already? He's like, why do you want another one? It's like, no, this is different. So I wonder, did you have to deal with this?
No. Now, to be honest, I did not know there was so much merchandise out there. Well, there wasn't really in those days. You know, there wasn't half as much as there is these days. But even just, you know, living in Dublin, there wasn't a huge Trek scene. I remember I did buy Star Trek Monthly magazine back in the day, and there was this pullout brochure for Forbidden Planet for their mail order. I don't know if the Dublin branch had been open by that time, but it was a brochure for Forbidden Planet. And actually, this is where I first learnt about Star Trek Voyager, because there you could order a cardboard life-size Captain Janeway from the brochure. And I was looking through this going, oh, Star Trek! Wait a second. Captain Janeway? I've never heard of Captain Janeway. Who's this? So gradually, you know, this is before the internet. It was very hard to get information. You know, gradually I became aware that there's a new Star Trek show on the way. So that was weird. But there was very little merch in that I knew of anyway. So I didn't really have that problem. The only thing I used to buy was Star Trek Monthly. I stayed in my room a lot as a teenager, to be honest. You know, I just kind of kept to myself. I didn't know any Trekkies. None of my friends had a clue what I would be talking about. I don't think I really even talked about it with them, to be honest. I suppose I was a little bit embarrassed because it was a nerdy thing, and nerdy things weren't really cool in those days. So it was a sad time to be a Star Trek fan. You know,
yeah,
it's much easier to be a Trekkie these days.
Oh, of course. Now it's cool to be a Trekkie.
Yeah, Yeah.
I remember when I was in school as well, and people just laughed at me. I remember even I got to the point when I went into school in a Star Trek uniform that my mom my mom made, and I remember the literature teacher looked at me and she was like, "Is this serious, Gary?" And I was like, "Yes." And she was like, "All right then." And she carried on with the class.
Very good. Well, that was a good reaction, I suppose. You weren't told to go home and change.
No, you know, the whole thing, you know, I'm pretty sure you remember Trekkies, the Dennis Crosby documentary from, I think, 97 or even older. And Barbara Adams was the person who said, and she was the one of the participants on this movie. And she was saying that, you know what, I'm just wearing this uniform because I believe in it, and it's the same as wearing a basketball uniform or a football uniform, like a football shirt. Like, why a Star Trek shirt makes people ridicule, and it's funny that statement basically stuck with me, and I was like, okay, you know what, I could wear anything. I could wear Chicago Bulls or I don't know. Anything else, a Star Wars t-shirt, like, that would be cool, but Star Trek, usually people like, meh, what the hell, you know?
it was weird. And at that age, I would have given anything to own a uniform. And I definitely would have worn that. I had a weird, I didn't have any fashion sense, I just had a weird taste in, you know, I would just throw on anything. And I was bullied for clothes and not wearing, really? Not wearing brands or whatever, like the color of your jeans. You know, I was, teenagers are mean. I did not like school, but I was, I definitely would have worn a uniform somewhere at least. But I never even knew you could even buy a uniform, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. I mean, before Evanos and all of these Chinese copies came in, I think the only option is to make it yourself. Yeah. Really.
Yeah. And I didn't know anyone that could have made it for me. I would have loved that.
But now you could start your own business making them.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, actually, I can make something for myself, but if somebody gave me measurements or anything, I would not know what to do with them. There is no way I could make anything for anyone else. No way. Except my kids, because I can go, come here, put this over your head. That's it.
I just disassemble one of their shirt and then just, okay, like, this is what I have to do. Just put it together in a different colors and systems. Oh, that's awesome.
Exactly, yeah. It's usually just buy them a top in their size and just stick things on it.
So I wonder, how did you get into crafting, and what is the origin of your name, your Twitter handle?
That is an interesting question. Nobody's ever asked me that. Crafting, I've always really been an arty person. I've always made things and, you know, tried to draw things. I've always been like that. I started crocheting before I had my first baby. I was making them a little, you know, the cliche baby blanket, learned how to crochet, you know. And from there, I thought, it'd be cool to make them a little hat. And the first hat I ever made was a little Raphael hat with the mask and everything and the eyes. And I just loved it. And I thought, God, this looks really good. I'll make another one, make another one. So I just started making them. And people were like, you should try and sell these. You know, people would want these. And I was like, I don't know if I could really, you know, really have the time or if I could do it, you know. So eventually people just asked me for them, so I just started making them, you know, and that's how I really got into doing that. My Twitter handle is, I set up Twitter initially for my hats to kind of try and have a hat business, which didn't really pan out, but Hen in a Hat is from a Dr. Seuss book, Dr. Seuss's ABC, I think is that one. And it's just one of the lines, Hen in a Hat, hooray, hooray. So I knew it was going to be from that book because we love that book.
Oh, nice.
And there's a lot of little quirky phrases in it. So Hen in a Hat just stuck out because of the hat, and I just stuck with that. And now I'm a cosplayer with a weird handle that has nothing to do with cosplay or Star Trek. So there you go. That's it.
Well, that's awesome. I would never have put together Hen in a Hat and Dr. Seuss, so that gives a certain gravitas to your name as well. from now on, for me at least, and for any of hopefully my listeners as well. Where was I? Yeah.
Crafting.
So, but yeah, crafting. And so you do have an Etsy store where you kind of sell these hats, and you made quite a few of them. And you feel free to plug that in as a not paid but advertisement.
Yeah, it's, well, I am brand new to Etsy. I've always meant to try and do it. I assumed I'd never have the time, but here we are. I have a bunch of hats that I was going to try and sell at some craft fairs. So I have a backlog of hats that I have to get up onto my site. Mm-hmm. It's just /henin-a-hat is where you can find me. At the moment, there is no stock up there. I set up my page the other day and I put up my Crochet Discovery, my Crochet Defiant, and my Crochet Baby Yoda, and they all vanished within hours.
Wow.
So I don't even plan on making them, really. I had them and I thought, well, these are just sitting around. I need to sell these. I need to get rid of these. People will want these. I need to start getting rid of this big pile of stuff, you know. So they have vanished. I have a backlog of hats that I'm going to throw up there, and some might be of interest to somebody. But if I'm always open to requests as well.
So anyone who listens to this podcast, please get in touch with Linda in Hen in a Hat in Twitter and in Etsy and get those hats. She's awesome.
Oh, thank you. And a lot of people do request certain starships. The Defiant and the Discovery, I picked those on purpose because they are flat. They're reasonably flat. They don't have a neck.
That's
on
true.
Them, so I don't know how to get Crochet to stand up. It's a floppy art form, so the flatter the better.
Were you ever gonna experiment with something like the Connie Enterprise or the Enterprise D or?
Yeah, it's just figuring out how to make the neck stand up. If I got some kind of wire in there, I just don't like the idea of putting wire into something that's supposed to be soft. I will have to research that. I have a feeling there is a way. I am going to look up some tutorials on YouTube and figure it out and hopefully start making those, because, people will want
awesome.
Those.
No, look forward to it when it comes out. A little bit back on the professional side, you have got involved with the two other Irish lad, Damien and Chris at the Nerd Escape podcast. How did that happen? If you just give us a bit of a detail in the back in the scenes. Chris and Damien are probably going to hate me for this, but hopefully
they
not.
They're sound lads. They're brilliant lads. I met Chris and Damien through they set up a Discovery fan page on Facebook, and I joined that page, and I was a regular commenter, and it was really, really nice little page. And they contacted me one day and said, "Would you be a mod?" So I was like, "Ah, yeah, okay. You know, how hard can it be?" And then eventually they made me an admin, and we are still in a group of people that we all kind of met up doing that, and we're all. Mm-hmm. We're all really good friends, and we all chat quite regularly. And that is how I met them. Then we've hung out at various comic cons. We went to Dublin Comic Con, and we went to DST. And me and Chris, it's easier for me to meet Chris because he's in Dublin. Damien is on the other side of the country, so it's I now live in the middle, which is kind of handier, but when I was in Dublin, I did meet up with Chris a couple of times. So that's how we became friends, and they just asked me to, well, I think I was on the Nerd Escape once or twice with a bunch of us from the Discovery page. Mm-hmm. And they just asked me to do a couple more, and then they just said, ah, will you... Actually, I don't even know if they asked me to be on it full time, but I kind of am. So it just happened. It just kind of happened. But they're That's lovely awesome. Lads. Lovely lads.
No, they are. They are. They're fantastic, and I had good time with them as well, individually and together as well. And I'm glad that, you know, you became the third musketeer, as I referred to you earlier. So there's a segment in this podcast. If you listen to this, you probably know what's coming. Do your chat, the Captain Kirk impression game. However, I'm going to test you, because you did mention at the beginning that you have been doing some Next Generation impressions back in the day. So I'm just wondering if you could revisit one of those impressions, anyone, and then I'll try to find out who you impersonate.
Okay. Mr. Wolf, torpedoes.
What was it, Deanna Troi?
No, that wasn't Deanna Troi. No, I've done a Deanna Troi impression already on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you'll have to go and find it. I'm not posting it for you.
that's awesome. But
that was on the spot. That was mean.
And that was the best William Shatner / Captain Picard I ever heard. No, that was fun. So how many of the impressions did you do? And I guess your brother and sister joined in as well.
Oh God, it just happens, you know, if we're talking about somebody, you know, we'll just come out with a wharf. I am not a merry man. You know, like our voices are good, our accents not so good, but yeah, it just comes out.
So, talking about accents, and this is something that actually you mentioned, because I was thinking how to, you know, divert towards the topic, and this is the time when I have to make a disclaimer. This is just for fun purposes, and I just really want to know the rumor behind these reputations of these certain episodes of Star Trek, where we have some Irish representation, let's say up the long ladder from Next Generation, and of course the mm-hmm. very infamous Fairhaven stories. How do you feel about them? Because I know a lot of people don't like them.
Yeah,
I find them funny, and I, to be honest, with Fairhaven, I never thought that it's, you know, I never really been in Ireland. Apart from Chris, Damien, and yourself, I don't really heard anyone else speaking Irish. And when I was watching them the first time, I didn't really pay too much attention. Mm-hmm. They just sounded different.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion apart from hating them? Which
yeah,
I heard.
I hate them. It's different from the outside looking in. You can, you know, Fairhaven, I'm sure it's a nice episode. I'm sure it's a funny episode. But all I can think is, I can't believe they did the Irish village again. You know, I just it gives me the shivers. I just feel sick when I Up the Long Ladder is terrible, and it does not exist, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So it's like one of the episodes of Star Trek that someone just dreamt of, and it's better keep it as a dream.
Exactly. It's just lifted from a 1940s play, mm-hmm. and it just, why, you know, why they're not even from the past. They've just gone back to the old ways of, you know, spinning their own wool and going around in their bare feet or whatever. I don't understand. Anyway, but we won't talk about it anymore, because it's putting me in a bad mood.
Yeah. How about Colm Meaney, though? He's fantastic.
He's an absolute legend. He's an absolute legend. There was a petition to put up a statue of him in Dublin. And
really?
I fully support that. Yeah. You know, people were talking about, you know, put up a statue of Chief O'Brien, but he has so much more than just Star Trek in his career. You know, he's just... Yeah, he's amazing in everything. He's brilliant in everything. I love him in... There's a film called Intermission. Mm-hmm. you should watch that. He's just hilarious and brilliant. And he's obviously known for the Roddy Doyle films as well, The Commitments and The Snapper and The Van, those kind of movies. But there's so much more to Colin Meaney than just Chief O'Brien. Even though Chief O'Brien is just, he's the best. He just takes he takes no crap from anybody. And I just love that he has his sleeves rolled up, you know, he rolls up his sleeves like a proper engineer and climbs in under the desk. He's something to be proud of, as an Irish person, definitely. I don't know if you want to discuss any more Irish
I don't want to upset anyone. neither you and any of my listeners.
Okay, we won't go near the Picard hologram incident, so.
No. I'm sure even some Scottish people could tell something about the Scottish lad in those holograms.
Yeah.
The Picard holograms. I mean,
I can't speak for any other nationalities, but yeah, when I heard it at first, I just face palmed. I literally face palmed, and I was like, rubbing my forehead.
I guess it's really hard with accents, especially because you try to make it sound as it is. I mean, I still remember, I know it's a bit of an off track, but when Benedict Cumberbatch, he plays Sherlock, and he is British. You can hear what he's saying and what is, he has the British that certain way a beautiful British accent, but when he plays Doctor Strange, that's just strange.
Yeah. I don't know. Doctor Strange, are you supposed to really pinpoint that accent? Because he's his own nationality.
True.
He's just a wizard. I love Doctor Strange. I love him. I feel bad for the guy playing Rios, because he had a lot to do, and he, you know, it's easy to get confused doing lots of characters, so fair play to him, he did kind of stick with it. He did his best, but I just don't understand why he had to do an accent that was not, you know, a proper real sounding accent, because nobody really talks like that. That I know, anyway. Some people might talk like that, but I haven't met them. I just don't see the need for it. There's no need. Everyone has their own Irish accent that they get out their Irish accent. They've had a few drinks or whatever. I know Zachary Quinto and Chris Pine had a lovely little outtake where they did the scene in an Irish accent. That was hilarious. But I don't know, it just feels like you're making fun of us when you know. And some people were sticking up for him, going, maybe it was supposed to be a bad accent because it was based on him, but in a bad representation of, I don't know, I just
okay, no, let's talk about them anymore, because I don't want to upset you more. And I already did more damage than I should have avoided.
No, it's okay, don't mind.
No, it's funny. I mean, I remember I watched an interview with James Doohan, bless him, on British TV. I think it was in the 70s or 80s, around Star Trek 4 or Star Trek 5, and the commentator asked him, like, how hard was it to do a Scottish accent, because obviously he's American, and he said that he was sitting next to a chap on a plane. The chap was coming from Aberdeen, and he was saying, like, I didn't understand a single word what he was saying. and he said that so he studied, he met with so many people, he researched the accent, and when he went back to Paramount, Roddenberry and the creative group told him that, you know, it's like, if you're gonna talk like this, no one gonna understand you, so you have to tone it down. So he said that whatever is on the screen, that's his clarity version of the Scottish accent, which would be an interesting topic for another day to discuss with a Scottish person. What do you think about the accent? But maybe that will that will upset way more people than I intend to.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. That, you know, you do have to be able to understand the character. And to me, that is like Scotty has been in Starfleet so long, hanging out with different nationalities, that his accent has kind of you know, mellowed a little bit towards, you know, a generic kind of accent. So yeah, I can understand. His is okay. He's Scotty. We can't change that. I did. Simon Pegg went full Scott, which is amazing. Yeah.
Perfect. No, he was a good Scotty for sure.
Yeah.
So wonder when someone shouts from the very far Star Trek, and you, like, you're doing totally like you're cooking and you think nothing about Star Trek, but when someone shouts in the other side of the house Star Trek, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? leave me alone, Gary, leave me alone.
Star Trek. Well, if it depends on who's shouting it. If it's my kid shouting it, I'll be worried about my ships or something. Like, what? Actually, it does happen. My kids are eating pasta, right? And I'll have my back turned, and they'll go, Mammy, Star Trek. And I'll turn around, and they'll have opened up the penne pasta. And when you open it up, it turns into a little delta. And they'll go, look, Mammy, I made a Star Trek badge.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. That it does happen in my house. I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but it's a real thing.
Well, that's more closer to family than anything else, and I think that Star Trek is basically about family in a certain level. So that's just beautiful, and you know, finding these little things in a day. I mean, just as I mentioned, my brother sometimes sees something in Star Trek related and send me a picture. It's more or less. It's not the same level, I know, but it's good to have this remembrance of other people, you know, realizing that, hey, that looks like something that my mommy or daddy likes, and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
That's awesome. And so as you probably know, that the whole podcast is based around this warm blanket that I always refer to Star Trek as a warm blanket to me, that, you know, that really just comforts me in many ways, and obviously it comes with many layers. So I wonder what Star Trek as a warm blanket means to you, or what is your warm blanket when you think about Star Trek?
Oh, it is just the future that I hope that we can get to. And there are times when it looks like, you know, yeah, that is possible. We can get there. Not worry about money or poverty or anything. And then something else will happen and I go, oh no, that's just a TV show, it's never going to happen. But, you know, it is just, especially with TNG, you know, Picard was such an icon of perfection, of, you know, what the human race can be. And that is what Star Trek is. It's just trying to get there, trying to get to that future where everyone is equal. I suppose that's my warm blanket. Yeah, just thinking about what could be.
And just a bonus question: do you think it is possible to get there? Do you see in our lifetime? Because I think we are more or less in the same age, right?
I don't think in our lifetime. I do think it will take something on the scale of an alien first contact. So whether the Vulcans are going to land or not, I think, you know, we all have to come together. And, you know, the coronavirus was, because it's not really happening, but it was a chance for us to all come together and work together and realize that we are all in the same situation. And if we work together, we can get out of it. But, you know, so many countries are doing very, very badly. Some countries are completely have eradicated it. And, you know, it wasn't what I had hoped. You know, I believe it will take something like this. But we have to see for ourselves that is what it's going to take. We have to see the chance when we get it. You know, we can't just continue life as normal. We have to go, wait a second, you know, maybe we can make the world a better place by coming together.
Yeah, essentially that, I think that's definitely going to be the base blocks of this whole idea of what Star Trek is, to really come together as one human race, so to speak. Like, forget about, like, you know, like, you don't respect every country borders in a sense. But I remember a quote from, I think it was an astronaut. I don't remember his name, but I remember the thing he said, that from up there, from the International Space Station, circling around the globe, you don't see borders, you don't see countries, you just see one big planet with life in it. And all of the borders and all of the countries just exist in your head. And someone said once, I don't remember who said that, but if people would be able to see our globe from outer space, then they might think twice to start, you know, caring about it a bit more than how we are at the moment. But yeah, Star Trek is a beautiful reminder to hey, look out for each other and get that hope and optimistic view of the future, because it is possible, as you mentioned as well, and I believe that too. And I guess many of our listeners and many Trekkies as well, they believe that it is possible.
Yeah.
Well, Linda, okay. this was fantastic. Thank you very much for for spending the time with me and with me in my little silly little show, talking about Star Trek and sharing your experience and letting your voice out. Please, for my listeners and whoever they don't come across with you, which is quite unlikely, in this stage, where people can find you and you know, where they can and when they can find your Etsy, Etsy store. I don't even not allowed to talk anymore.
Etsy is, well, I'm brand new there, so I would give that a little while. It's Etsy/henninahat. @henninahat1 on Twitter, and my YouTube channel is henninahat. I am on Instagram as well, but I can't not get Instagram to work, so I'm having an issue with that. But yeah, I'm everywhere. Henninahat.
And on that note, a massive congratulations for you as well, because you just reached, I think you're over 100 subscribers now, so
yeah,
congratulations on from my end officially.
And I would like, sorry, before I go, I would like to plug the Nerd Escape podcast. We have a new Twitter account, and I think it is escape_nerd, but if you go to my profile, I have a link there. I think I got it right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Nerd Escape podcast as well, guys. Check it out. You can hear and listen to Linda's thoughts as well, along with Damien and Chris, who we all know and love and cherish. And check out Linda's YouTube channel, and everything that she creates is fantastic. So please give her a like, and show your love, and talk Star Trek.
Yeah, well, talk Trek to me.
Talk Trek.
Talk nerdy to me.
Well, again, thank you very much, Linda, to be in the show. It was absolutely fun to talk to you. Thank you again for all the listeners to listening to another episode of the Warm Blanket Podcast. And until next time, live long and prosper. And that was it for this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it, and rest assured, new episodes will be coming out every week, where we sit down with a Trekkie to find out what makes us feel good about Star Trek and to discover what is our warm blanket made of. If you really enjoy listening to this podcast, please leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. It would really mean a lot to me. To find out more about this audio adventure, please visit trekkerprize.com/podcast, where you can also listen to the previous episodes. Thank you again for listening to yet another episode of the Warm Blanket Podcast, and I'll see you in the next episode. Live long and prosper.